Hey, this is Kevin Weatherby of Save the Cowboy. I want you to toe that stirrup, throw a leg over the cantle, take a deep seat, and pull your hat down tight. I ain't gonna tolerate no whining or griping, so let's all strike a long trot down that narrow trail and learn how to ride with God. Come on! What you waiting on? Let's go.
So, anybody follow Kevin Weatherby on social media? A bunch of us, right? If you know, he's pretty prolific. But if you followed him on social media for any amount of time, you know in about the last 2 years, Kevin got a bird, right? And I don't know the makeup of this bird, because we'll get to the fact that I'm not a bird person to begin with. But I think it's like a gray South African Colombian cockatoo or whatever it is. But it's this gray bird with a pink head. And he calls it Pink Floyd, right? Or also known as Floyd. And the thing about me is I'm not really a bird person. I can remember actually when I was newer to the fire service, we actually got a service call to somebody's house. And what happened was these people were moving, and in the process of them moving, like I'm figuring out that birds are super smart animals, but in the process of them moving, this bird got out and flew up to about the biggest tree that we could possibly have in our district. So they called us for help, right? These are tax-paying citizens. We want to try to take care of them like we take care of our families. So we're like, sure, we'll try to get this. They're telling us it's like a $3,000-$4,000 bird, which I need to get in the bird business if you guys are paying that much for them. But they tell us that there's this bird stuck in the tree, and you can hear it because the one thing about birds is they can talk, and they're really mean, and they're really loud, and that's another reason why I don't really like Floyd very much. So 40 feet up in a tree about, we have about a 35-foot ladder at the highest. So we try and go and get this bird. And in the fire service, there's a ranking system, right? So there's the official ranks, and then when you're the newer person, you do everything, AKA you do the jobs that nobody else wants to do. So they're looking at me and they're like, hey, Rook, you're up. Go up and get that bird. Normally, I'll do anything, but on that day, it was absolutely not for me. Like, I don't care what you do. You can fire me. I won't even ask for a ride back. I am not going up the tree to get that bird. So we end up climbing up the tree. I didn't do it, of course. Scare the bird off, and it flies about 2 miles. Like, long story short, we ended up chasing this bird all day long. And I think they finally ended up getting it in a fence post in Hanover, which if you know El Paso County, you know Hanover is a very rural place about as far south before Pueblo as you can go. So this bird flew miles and miles and miles. I appreciate its dedication. So that's like the first story I've had with these big expensive birds, right? So fast forward a couple years later, it's been about 2 years now, Kevin and Cammie asked me to watch the ranch. So normally that's a yes from me, because it's really fun. I can do whatever I want there. There's food in the fridge. I'm really appreciated. So that's a yes from me. But they caveat it with, hey, Floyd is new, and they tell me this is a fairly expensive bird. He bought it for her as a gift. Blah, 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 right? So it puts a lot of pressure on me not to lose this bird. And to add to that, me and this bird have been battling for a little while. My aunt, if you guys don't know, Cammie's my aunt, and she swears it's because I always wear hats. But this bird has flown at me, attacked me, constantly calls me fat, which hurts my feelings. Like, birds are just mean. So I'm babysitting the bird, and I have to feed the horses and the 100 dogs that are running around there, and all of that stuff. It's pretty easy. I just have to slide food in this cage, and it doesn't stop him from trying to get at me. But he can't hurt me, right? So fast forward, one of these days, if you guys know Joe Douglas, he's around here a lot. He's one of my best friends. He runs around with me and Mitch. Kind of a bonehead, but I love him. We had plans to go, so we were going to go ride horses or do whatever at his house. And as I normally do, even before this sermon, I laid down to take an afternoon nap, and I'll never forget it because Seinfeld's on the TV. The couch is comfy. I just snuggle in a warm blanket. I could see Floyd in his cage, and I lay down to take a nap. I ended up waking up to his phone call asking where I am. So my phone starts ringing, and I look up for a second, and Floyd is sitting on the top of the birdcage. I kid you not, like, there's a locking mechanism. Like, Kevin went over everything with me. He said, hey, this cage locks right here. And then to add to it, we have a little clip here that locks here and here. So there's no way this bird can get out. And there's no way I was letting the bird out. One, I didn't want to lose it because it was a lot of money. Two, we just have that history, right? But I open my eyes and I look at the TV and Kramer's right there. And then to the left, Floyd is just sitting there staring at me like this. And I'm like, you have to be freaking kidding me. So the first thing I do is I call my aunt and I'm like, hey, they're in Texas. And I'm like, hey, you're not gonna believe me when I say this, but Floyd is out of his cage. Everything is locked. I don't know how he got these miraculous magician powers, but he's sitting on top of his cage growling at me. And they laugh at me and they're kind of like, hey, man up and just go grab him. They have these gloves that they use to wear because he'll bite you too. So I grab these gloves and I make one attempt at trying to get this dude. So I walk over there with these gloves and I try to grab him. He flies right by, rips the hat off my head, and I go running like a 10-year-old girl. So I duck behind the couch and I'm sitting there like peeking up over it like I'm a soldier engaged in trench warfare and just trying to figure out how I'm going to get this bird. So long story short, I end up being late. Joe gives me a call again and I'm like, dude, you have to come here and help me. There's no way I'm getting this bird. At this point, I've tried everything. Like I walked over there and kind of like tried to throw a blanket over it, which he laughed at. So I'm like, dude, if you want to hang out, you have to get here and help me catch this bird. So he shows up and Floyd gives him the runaround a little bit, ends up flying everywhere around the house. At this point, I'm just trying to keep the door shut so he doesn't get out because I know we'll never get him again. Joe corners him in the bathroom and ends up hitting him in a towel. But if you watch, it was a funny sight to see because you see me just cowering there behind the couch and Joe's walking in a towel, but this towel's like rumbling back and forth. Like he has a little tiny boxer or something in it. He's just giving us the what for. And he ends up reluctantly getting Floyd back into his cage. And I, in preparation for this Easter Sunday, like thinking about this story, thinking about the cage and the bird and my idiocracy and all of that stuff, I start to think, what does it look like to be free? And I want us to think about that for a second. Like, what does it look like for us as humans in a free country? We can do whatever we want, but to your soul and to you, who you are as a person, what does it look like to be free? Because as you know, the story of Easter, right? Christ entered the city of Jerusalem and Holy Week began, and he knew that this sacrifice was coming. And he sacrificed himself because that was the price that was needed for us to be free, right? And I think sometimes we think about Christianity, even us as Christians, we look at it from the outside in or the inside out, and we think that Christianity is just this big way that God developed to keep us within the confines of rule books, right? Or to keep us from doing what we want, to keep us from having fun, to put us in a metaphorical bird cage, right? But what we find and what we're gonna explore tonight is that's not actually the case. The story in the Bible, like these can seem like hard for us to grasp sometimes, and I think that's sometimes why we overcomplicate the Bible. But what we see is like Christ used these ordinary, sinful, unperfect people to help carry out the message of the early days of Christianity. And my challenge to you guys is I think that we're gonna see that in a story tonight, but that's how Christ used people. And what we see, like we think about the sacrifice of Jesus all the time, and we talk about how grateful we are, and we rejoice, and we celebrate, celebrate, celebrate. But what does it really mean to us as a church, as a religion, as people of Christ, And it comes back to me every time that it means freedom. When Christ laid his life down 2,000 years ago around this time, what we gained is freedom. And that's the case I'm going to try to make to you guys tonight. He used fishermen, he used tax collectors, he used murderers, he used all of these people, unperfect people, to carry out a perfect plan of redemption for all of us here. And I think there's something to that. A redemption story of how Christ sees us and how Christ loves us is the story of Easter. And in the grand story, and I want you guys to really think about this, ask yourself, how does God use the behind-the-scene people to carry out our master plan or his master plan? And it starts with a man named Barabbas. What do we know about Barabbas? If you've been in church any amount of time, you've probably heard this story, right? We have this rebel. The Bible describes him as a murderer, a criminal, a career criminal. And he was really a thorn in the side for the Romans. He was a modern-day insurrection leader, right? So his biggest thing was he was a most likely a man of Jewish faith who did not agree with the Roman occupation of Israel at the time. And he caused all of these problems. And I think what we'll see a lot through Barabbas is a lot of us in him. And that's the case that I'm going to try to make to you guys, is who is Barabbas and why is his story so important, one, to the story of Easter, but so important and applicable to our lives. If you have your Bibles, open with me to Matthew chapter 27. Matthew 27 is where we're going to be in. I'm going to read a big chunk here, and then I'm just going to talk, okay? So it says this in verse 15. Now it was the governor's custom each year during the Passover celebration to release one prisoner to the crowd, anyone they wanted. This year there was a notorious prisoner, a man named Barabbas. As the crowds gathered before Pilate, if you know who Pilate is, he's the Roman governor in charge of that area of Israel at the time. As they gathered at Pilate's house that morning, he asked them, which one do you want me to release to you? Barabbas or Jesus, who is called the Messiah? He knew very well that the religious leaders had arrested Jesus out of envy. So even, it says in the Bible, even Pilate knows what's going on here. So the governor asked again, which one of these two do you want me to release to you? The crowd shouted, Barabbas, right? And we talked about it last week, how this same crowd that's now calling for Jesus's blood, that's now calling for his murder, was some of the same people that were rejoicing as Jesus entered in Jerusalem on Palm Sunday. Just to paint that picture for you a little bit. So picking up in verse 22, Pilate responded, then what should I do with Jesus, who is called the Messiah? Hear me out on this. They shouted back, crucify him. So not only were they praising him in one moment as he entered the city, the coming of the Messiah, prophecy had been fulfilled, and now they're calling for his death. Picking up in verse 23, it says this. Pilate says, why? What crime has he committed? But the mob roared even louder, crucify him. Verse 26, so Pilate released Barabbas to them. He ordered that Jesus be flogged with a lead-tipped whip, then turned over to the Roman soldiers to be crucified. The story of Barabbas, when I read through that, I think that this is the most absurd thing that I have ever heard. Anybody disagree with that? Like, you have Barabbas, and what I love about this, or what I hate about this, you choose, is that even Pilate, a non-Christian, a non-native, somebody from the outside looking in, is telling people that the idea of a holy man, like even if they didn't believe him to be the coming of the Messiah, he's telling them, like, this is a bad idea. You want this guy instead of that guy? It's just absurd, right? Because they said Barabbas is this insurrection leader, and he's a murderer, and he's a thief, and he's a crook, and he runs around with his thug friends just causing problems in Israel, yet the crowds are calling for him over Jesus. And there's some prophecy to that, right? Like, what happened with Jesus had to happen, and Jesus was clear about that throughout the New Testament. But it just doesn't make sense when we look at it through that lens. You got Barabbas, this murderer, and he is set free. And when I think about that, and we talked about it last week, it's just wild because Jesus didn't deserve what was coming to him. He was a sinless man, it said. All he did was help people. Even in today's society, if a man like Jesus existed, we would want him around. Like, not a lot of people would disagree with him. You may disagree with his teaching, but I'm talking about the character of Jesus Christ, which we have looked at in depth, was a good man. And yet we see this crowd effect where these people, who some of them were praising Jesus a couple days before, whether it be the crowd effect or peer pressure or whatever, because it says that the Pharisees were walking through the crowd convincing people, but we see them calling for Jesus's blood. It's just an absurd story, but I think that it has great application to our lives. Because if you think about our existence, who we are as people, the things we do and enjoy, and the ways that we cope with pain and trauma and everything that life throws at us, you would probably describe your life as absurd. So what I want us to see in this story first with Barabbas is that there's some absurdity to our lives, right? Like, looking at it from the outside in, there is just the same sentiment of sinfulness, of just human reaction and all of these things that we start to see ourselves in this story. And I tell you all that to tell you this. I'm Barabbas. You're Barabbas. All of us fit into this narrative. What I like to call it, and what I thought about, and I think it's very hits home for the holidays, is I call it an Easter egg. And the Bible is full of these little Easter eggs, or foreshadowing, or symbolism, as you like to call it. We see it once before in the Easter story, right? If we go back to Genesis, which we just went through, we saw where Abraham was called to sacrifice his son on what was called Mount Moriah. And then the same mountain in the New Testament is called Golgotha. And then when Jesus was sacrificed there, it was called what? Calvary, right? So God asks Abraham, out of obedience, to take his son to Mount Moriah at the time to carry wood on his back, take him up there and sacrifice his son, because that's what was called of him, correct? And then what happens a couple thousand years later? We see that God calls his son, Jesus Christ, to carry wood on his back, to go up to the mountain and to sacrifice his own self, which is God's son. So that's like a little Easter egg of the Easter story, right? But another one that I find here is this. In one cage, and I will get there in a second, but a little Easter egg of the name Barabbas. Let's break that down. We've heard this name 100 times, thousands of times, however we want to classify it. But have you ever stopped to break down what the meaning of the name Barabbas is? In Arabic, in Hebrew, in Greek, which most of the New Testament is written in, the word bar is an example of who your father is. So the way I liken that is, like, in Irish culture, if you see the word Mick, that means son of or daughter of. So if you see Mick Donald, what they're saying is son of Donald. And if you take it to the culture of Islam or in the Middle East, that same substitute can be used for the word bin. So Osama bin Laden means son of bin Laden. So what you see in Jewish custom here is that bar means son or daughter of, and most likely sons, because they didn't really talk about women like that in the day, but it applied to both. So Bar, right? Bar is the first part of Barabbas' name. What does Abba mean? We've heard it, you know, we heard it when Jesus went and prayed and sweat blood like Kevin talked about today. Abba means father, right? And more specifically, it means the father. There was multiple words for the name father, but when you use the word Abba, you were serious to mean a very powerful father. So now we have Bar, son of, Abba, father, and then there's a little S in the end. What does S imply in our culture? Possession. So when we break down the name Barabbas, we see son of the fathers. So when you start to look at this story, just like we looked at a separate story this morning, what we're seeing here is a little Easter egg of symbolism that Barabbas is all of us. And again, I say that because I am Barabbas and you are Barabbas. Like, I'm the one that's stuck in the cage of materialism in this life. And you guys are the ones that are stuck in the cage of addiction, of overworking, of overeating. Like, all of these things that we deal with are these cages that we are stuck in life. We are Barabbas, right? Do you guys see how that starts to apply to our lives? Because it's really important. And then we see this story, right, where there was this cross and it was meant for Barabbas. And if you take that one deeper to our meaning this evening, the cross that Jesus was on was meant for us. We are Barabbas. Your bond had to be purchased with blood. Like, there's this thing where we talked about being stuck in these cages and all of these things that we do. And the penalty for that, for the penalty for our sins and our misdoing, was God's wrath. And the only way for God's wrath to be met was somebody's blood. And where we start to see the love from Jesus was that instead of it being your blood or your cross or your burden to bear, God sent his son. That's the Easter story, right? In preparation for this, I was starting to think, I heard a wonderful story from one of the leaders that I worked for. So I promoted at the new year, and the first thing we had to do was go through this week-long leadership academy. And one of the cool things that they put us through was they got a bunch of leaders from all over the place. Like, there was a police chief and some military leadership. And they told us to come up with three questions for these guys. So just three questions that you could ask them about life, about leadership, any of that stuff. And one person who I worked for, he ended up telling this story. He's kind of new to us. But he's this amazing godly leader that I admire so much. And he was telling us a story about how on his previous department, he ended up losing a firefighter there. And I'm not going to go too in-depth about it because there's still things going on with it. But essentially, he was the leader of the fire department in his city. And they had a fireworks show. And he didn't agree with the fire department doing this show. If you guys don't know anything about fireworks, they're super dangerous. You have to have certifications. But he let the city pressure him in because he wanted to do it, send it out to a private company. He did that for 1 year, got a bunch of citizen complaints. They didn't like it. The firefighters didn't like it very much. They wanted to put on this show for their city. And so he decides the next year that they're going to reinstate that. Long story short, there was an accident with the storage of these fireworks. And there ended up being a couple people who were hurt really badly. But there ended up being a man who was one of his friends. They had children around the same age who got burnt really, really bad. He was burnt so bad that the city he worked in, they had to fly him to a burn center, which was in another state. And as he's telling this story, like, you can see the emotion, you can see, like, he's just being real and opening himself up. And he talks about the fact that he just went to visit this guy every day, drove hours and hours and hours to see this guy in the hospital, to be with his family, to make sure everything is, like, doing everything he could to care for somebody. And he talked about how in the back of his mind, an investigation's going on. There's legal proceedings to all of this stuff. And he talked about how in the back of his mind, he was sure that he was going to be taken out in handcuffs for a decision that really wasn't his. And I don't know, that just kind of resonated with me. Like, what a great leader and what a great sacrifice you have to make to be going through all of that, to be facing legal consequences, possibly prison time, being away from your family, and to still care for somebody else who is lower in rank than you, all of these things. And I like that to me is the Easter story. And that's the story we've seen in the New Testament the whole time with Jesus, right? Like all he did was care for people at a cost to him. And I start thinking about that within the Easter story. And these things just don't resonate or make sense, right? Like what a great man that had to be sacrificed for us. It brings up this deeper point about freedom and what we're looking at. But let me ask you guys something real quick. Why are you in church? And obviously it's a rhetorical question. Or where were you at the first time that you came to church? How did you feel the first time you came to church? When I think about the first time that I came to church, I came looking to be free. Like I was going through a lot and the world was just beating me up and friends and loved ones and everybody else had turned their back to me and I found no other way. I just needed something. At the depths of who I was looking to be free. And I venture to guess that most of you are that same way. Like not just my experience as a pastor, like not a lot of people end up here if they weren't here in the first place, if while they're making money or their things are going good in their lives. Like usually most people that end up here are looking for something, even if things are going correct. And I just remember coming to church and wanting to feel this story of freedom, right? Wanting to feel something different and something better than who I was at the time. And for a lot of us, when we think about Christianity, and we said this earlier, it represents some sort of prison, rules, something's being held back from us. But in Christ, there's nothing but freedom. And a lot of people can attest to that. The ultimate freedom. And let me provide you another example here. It's just all examples tonight, right? I would venture to say that almost everybody, every single one of us humans wants to live forever. And people argue with me, right? But in doing my research, I found that there's this thing called the age industry. And what it is things like Botox and plastic surgery and all of these creams and medicines that people take to stay young. Can you guys imagine how much money is spent on this industry a year just in the United States? I'll tell you, $340 billion of pure profit. That's what people spent in America last year to try and stay young, to try and be something that they aren't, right? Or they're not necessarily at the time. $340 billion. And I say that because to me, when we talk about wanting to stay young, another word for that is to live forever. Us as humans, especially in American society, are always finding ways where we can live longer, enjoy life more, see my kids walk down the aisle, things like that. We spend so much time trying to figure out how we can live forever. But what we see in the sacrifice of Easter and the sacrifice of Jesus Christ is that we're provided that freedom for absolutely free, right? $340 billion we go out and spend looking to live forever. And yet Jesus, in one act of sacrifice, offered that to us for free. And that's where I start to say that the belief that we're imprisoned as Christians or that we can't leave or have fun or we live within this rule book, right, is so absolutely untrue. And my people that have been believers for a long time would probably venture to agree with me, right? Like there is so much freedom in obedience to Jesus and in obedience to his word and the things that are asked of us in the Bible. And we spend so much time, I guess, trying to look away from that. We spend so much time holding on to guilt and all of these things that, again, in one act of Jesus's love was taken from us. I heard an awesome quote. Do you guys know who Granger Smith is? I'd venture in this room that a lot of people know who he is. And if you don't know his story, he's a country singer. Or he was a country singer, and now he is a pastor. He's actually going through seminary, all of those things, and he pastors a church. And if you know his story, you know that a couple years ago, him and his family were in the backyard playing, and somehow his young 2 or 3 year old son ended up getting through the safety gate to their pool, and unfortunately the child drowned. And he wrote this book called Like a River, and I would highly suggest it to anybody who is suffering from grief of a loved one or suffering the feelings of a loss. Like, it's an excellent book. But he talks about just the process that he went through of trying to get rid of this guilt of blaming himself for being this child's father and being the only one there when this child drowned and died. But one quote he had in there that really I just felt to my core, he said, "A guilty man cannot experience freedom when he believes at his core that he's still guilty." And to me, that's the big story that applies to our lives with Jesus, right? Like, we hold on to so much guilt and shame and all of these things, but yet Jesus is telling us a different story. Jesus told us through his actions and his sacrifice and everything, all the events of Easter, that you don't need to hold on to that anymore, that you don't need to feel guilty about that stuff. Like, give it to him because he can handle it. And that's what we see, like, in the story of Barabbas. That's who we are, right? We are sinful, murderous. So hopefully nobody in this room, but we are sinful, murderous people whose default is always going to be to break the rules. And yet, the cross that was meant for that kind of person, the death and the blood and all of these things, all the punishment that was meant for that kind of person was taken for us. And that, my friends, is our freedom, right? Like, we don't have to suffer that. Kevin talked about it today, how we don't experience our deaths. Christ comes and gets us. Tell me any more freedom you have than the fact that once you get out of this life, you don't have to feel you leaving, and you reside with God in paradise. It's the ultimate freedom, right? Like, it's like our dad owns the mansion down here, so we don't have to worry about breaking the rules, and that might not be a great example, so I'll scrap that one. But we live in the mansion that our father owns, and he's preparing us a room in an even better mansion. So what do I really have to worry about down here? That, my friends, is the freedom that we experience in Christ. Does that start to resonate with you? Because there's a couple things when I think about Jesus that I don't think he gets enough credit for. Number one was that Jesus was an incredible leader. Like, I read leadership books all the time. I try to perfect the art. I do all of these things and pay all this money. And yet the best leadership book I have ever found is the New Testament. Like, Jesus doesn't get enough credit for how he is as a leader. And I always try to emulate that, whether I'm leading you guys here, whether I'm leading my people at work. He doesn't get enough credit for that. And the second thing I think about with Jesus is we don't give him enough credit for how brutal of a death he experienced for us. Because the Bible tells us that he was fully God and fully man, right? And there had to be, you know, I sit and I think about this, and there had to be better ways to do this, at least in my mind. But that's not the case, right? Like, God is all-knowing, all-understanding, and he sent his son to be in our to pay for our sins and to take on that sacrifice for us. And I think we hear it so much in our lives, especially as Christians, and we don't give Christ enough credit for the sacrifice that it took, for the trauma that he went through. I think we're very desensitized to it. And I know some people who know what I do will look at me and say, well, yeah, you deal with that all the time. So it's really not that big of a deal to you as far as dealing with death and the gravity that comes with it. But I would say the opposite. Like I do by trade deal with death and destruction and all of those things probably more than the average person. But I would make a case to you that it actually, the more you deal with it, makes you more callous and desensitized to it. So I always find myself trying to not be calloused about that. But my ultimate point in saying that is I don't think we give Christ enough credit for the suffering that happened on our parts. Sometimes we go to this place where we think that, you know, he was all God and all man, so maybe he didn't feel anything, but it was just this big tragic thing. And I don't want that to fall on deaf ears on Easter Sunday night. I don't want that sacrifice to be in vain, and I want us to understand what it took and the deep price of blood and pain and trauma that comes with our sin. Because when we understand that, I think we're less apt to be our old selves. We're less apt to do the things that we used to do that made us sinners in the first place. And we're more apt to love and to gravitate towards the things of God and all of those things. So in closing, I just want to say this. Like in closing, I want to humble myself in front of you guys for just a second. I don't claim to be a master theologian. And it's funny because more people are starting to listen to me. And I've had actually a couple conversations this week about a couple things that were said up here on the stage that maybe certain people don't agree with. And I come to expect that. I don't claim to know everything about the Bible. In fact, there's probably a handful of you in here that know much more about the Bible than I do. What I try to do is get up here and bring a solid message and relate to you guys. I don't claim to be this master know-it-all. What I do claim to be is a biblical leader. What I do claim is that I want to be prepared for you guys, and I want to set an example. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned about leadership and leading people is that relating with people actually is, admitting my faults and admitting my weaknesses and acknowledging where I fall short and agreeing to work on that is a much better leadership tactic than me standing up here on a stage on a pedestal lording my knowledge over you guys. I always want to be a biblical leader, and more importantly, I want the same for you guys. Like, I get up here and I teach and I put myself out there, and sometimes I look like an absolute moron, I'll acknowledge that. And, you know, sometimes you bomb, and sometimes you just hit it out of the park. But I do that in an attempt to relate to you guys and to teach you guys and for you guys to teach me. I put myself out there. So I will deal with those conversations of, well, you said this about the Bible and I don't agree. And I always say, like, any complaints, send to kweatherby@savethecowboy.net. That's my secretary, and they'll cycle through all those complaints. But I want to lead like Jesus. I, like you, carry the story of the gospel, because everybody in here is a leader in their own form. That's what God has called you guys to be. And the best way I know how to approach that is to stand up here humbly in front of everybody. To just tell this story about where I went wrong and where I'm going wrong, and hopefully relate with you guys, teach you guys something, give you guys something that you could take out and help other people. That, my friends, I think is the story of Easter, and I think is the story of the gospel. And I don't ever want it to again fall on deaf ears that we are walking examples of that every single day. We carry the gospel with us. in our actions, in the way we talk, in the things we watch and we read and we consume. I hate to admit this. Here's me admitting a fault. We carry the gospel in the way we drive. If you guys have been here for any amount of time, you know what I'm talking about because I tell those stories all the time. I'm a terrible driver and I have no patience. But we carry that, right? We carry the gospel in the way that we treat our waitresses when we go out to eat after church. Like all of that stuff. Like we are big walking billboards that display the love of Jesus Christ or turn people away from Jesus Christ. And I never want us to forget that. I carry the gospel, you carry the gospel. And we know, like we know that paradise is in store for us. So we don't have a ton to worry about here. I'm not saying we're ever gonna worry because the Bible is very clear about the fact that when you decide to give your life to Jesus, like a lot of you guys did today, and when you decide to follow Jesus, that it doesn't get easy for you. But what is in store for you is so much bigger than we can even comprehend, than we can understand, but it's so much bigger than this world. And I to me, again, that's the story of Easter right there, is that Christ came and died for you, and you are a free person. And what I don't want us to do is to go back into the cages, you know, the bird cages of where we were before we became Christ followers. And I want to speak specifically to people who are maybe on the edge of giving their lives to Christ, or who are maybe trying to figure this Christianity thing out and how it'll work in their life, that there is so much freedom if you would just exit the bird cage. And again, that's the story of Easter and God's love for you. Because speaking specifically of new followers, and I learned this from another pastor, but there's always two specific questions when people come up to me, a new person, that I ask people about God. The first one, I ask them, if you died today on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that you would go to heaven? And for most people, you know, if you talk to a non-believer, that's gonna be a pretty low. Like most of them will tell you 1, 2, 3, 4. And then most Christians, I'm awfully surprised by their answer because it's never 10. Which is interesting to me because the Bible's clear, right? Like, you know, when you think of the story of Easter, like even the thief on the cross, like that guy did nothing. Before he had his last conversation with Jesus, he was probably at a zero if you asked him that question. God is clear. It's not by our works, right? It's by grace and faith in Jesus Christ alone. That should be a 10 for all of you guys. The second question I ask them is, and I'm sorry, I'm drawing a little blank here, but the second question I ask them is, when you do get to heaven, and you, let's say hypothetically, you're standing at the pearly gates, and Jesus asks you, my son or daughter, why do you deserve to be in heaven? I'd venture to say that most Christians would say, well, Lord, because I, comma, right? Because I tithe 10%, because I never missed a Sunday morning service, because I never missed a Sunday evening service. Like you guys, by the way, being here, get more points. No, I'm just joking. But I never miss a Sunday evening service. Lord, I talked to my coworkers about you and I prayed and I did all of this stuff. And then if you ask a non-believer that, or somebody who's maybe new to the faith, most of the time the answer is, I don't know. And what I would say about that is the I don't know person is closer to the better answer than the Lord because I person. Like as a leader, and as a man of Christ, and as somebody who experiences the freedom that comes with that, I never want my answer to that question to be, Lord, because I. Because if you know the story of Easter and you know everything that happened, the only logical answer that I could come up with is, Lord, because you. Like There's nothing I have done. I'm not worthy. I've sinned and I've done wrong and all of these things. But Lord, because of you, because you sacrificed yourself, and I was just willing to follow you and believe that and love you, and you loved me back so much. Lord, it's because you. And I hope that's a convicting couple of questions for people in here to think about on Easter Sunday. What would you say to Christ if you were at the hypothetical pearly gates, not to open a can of worms here, and he asked you why you deserve to be in? What I can tell you is that every single one of you doesn't deserve to be in, but every single one of you has freedom in the fact that you will be there if you just find it in your heart to acknowledge Jesus Christ and to love him and to have a relationship with him. And I think about it this way, kind of the last example I'll give you guys tonight. Let's say I had 4 tickets to the Super Bowl. Center, 50-yard line, 1 row back from the team you're going for. And I said, hey, I booked a hotel and I have these tickets and I had all of this stuff, but I can't go, so I'm going to give them to you. Who in their right mind, raise your hand real quick, would say no to that? Like, hey, I have these tickets and I have these hotels reserved and here's a little per diem for food. All you have to do is accept it. It's all there for you. Not a single one of us would be like, ah, no, no thanks. I got to work on Monday, man. So you would take those tickets, right? And you would acknowledge it. Like, it's at no cost to you. And you would sit there outside the stadium and give them your tickets. And you probably wouldn't be asked this, but what if the doorman there asked you, like, you know, whose tickets are these? Why do you deserve to be there? The answer to that would be, it doesn't matter, right? Like, I'm in possession. This was a gift that was given to me. There are seats reserved for me on the 50-yard line. They are mine. They were given to me as a gracious gift. That, my friends, is the story of the Lord's sacrifice for us, right? Like, there's nothing we can do to earn it, but it's just ours. Like Kevin said this morning, like, you have a place being prepared for you. What's more loving than that? What's more loving than a God who would send his son to be sacrificed for us? And not only that, like, he owns this big, incredible mansion, and he's preparing a place for you. Like, it's yours, it's all yours, and all you have to do is accept it. That is the freedom that we see. And what I would venture to ask people is just, if you're struggling with that, come and talk to us. If you're struggling with that, get in prayer. If you're having a hard time finding evidence of this sacrifice, like, let's have a conversation, because what's waiting on the other side for that is absolute and positive freedom for us. We don't have to experience death. We have better things in store for us than the things that are being offered to us in this world that we didn't like anyways. That's what is available to us. And I hope that we all take that very seriously. And we take the time to not only reflect on the festivities of Easter, but to reflect on the fact that there's symbolism in the Bible. Like, we're all Barabbas, we're all sinners. And all we have to do is bring that to the feet of Jesus Christ and we're forgiven. Like, it's that easy. We overcomplicate it, but it's that easy, and that's what's in store for us. And I, as we leave and we close out in prayer, I just pray that everybody here experiences that when they think about Easter from here on out. Let's go to God in prayer. Lord, I thank you, one, that I just get to humbly get up on this stage and pastor people, and that there's souls in this room who are willing to hear it, Lord, and willing to love me and willing to put away my faults and just be community to me, Lord. It's such a blessing to be able to tell people about you and to talk about your word, and that speaks to the sacrifices that you made for all of us on the cross, Lord. I know it was brutal. I know that it was something that Jesus didn't want to do. But I thank you so much that your love is so endless and so deep for us that you're willing to do that for us. That you're willing to pay the price for people who would never love you, and people who like me, who still sin and still turn their back on you at points, Lord, and you still walk with us and you still love us, and you gave us this wonderful story, and more importantly, you freed these birds from the cages that we were all in, Lord. I just pray that you keep people from going back, that we build these relationships with you. That way we can take them into our workplace and we can take them into our week. And when we struggle, Lord, we know that the bird cage isn't the answer, and coming to you is where we find our healing and where we find our peace and where we find our love. And may we just never forget that, God. Thank you so much for this Easter Sunday. Not just the fact that Christ was sacrificed, but the fact that he was raised 3 days later, and we have every ounce of energy to be joyful about that because of that, Lord. It's in your name we pray. Amen.